Sorry.
Oh.
I turned your microphone on as you were checking your hernias.
That's fine. Yeah. I'm hernia free. Thank you, Wendy. Hi, guys. It's Bill and it's Wendy. We're both hernia free. Mary Schmeek is here. Mary, hernia or no hernia?
I wouldn't say it on air.
No. Good for you. The Chronicles of Hernia. That's Mary's new book.
You know, we print people are far more discreet than you radio.
You hold back. You have to hold back. First of all, thank you for coming in today. Always good to see you.
Thank
Always
you for
good
staying.
To sub for Eric Zorn.
30 years ago, the world changed. What happened 30 years ago that changed this world?
30 years ago, last week, the World Wide Web was invented.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already forgetting the inventor's name, Tom somebody. Forgive me, Tom, for not remembering your name for changing the world for us.
Is it the Tom from MySpace?
No, it's a different Tom.
But he invented Berners-Lee? What we now think of as, yes, exactly, thank you, of as the World Tim. Wide Web. And don't ask me to explain the World Wide Web. I will explain to you that the web and the internet are not the same thing, right? The web is basically a way to connect all of these. Really, don't right. ask me to explain.
No, I won't ask.
But it got me to thinking, 30 years ago, I mean, of course, I'm barely old enough to remember.
Sure.
30
Us too.
Years ago. But what did we do? How was life different before we had the World Wide Web?
Because
we live our lives online now.
Yeah.
I used to cook. I used to clean the house. I used to do things that mattered. That's what I did 30 years ago.
It's definitely changed how we spend our time, right? In some ways, it's given us time. And in the other ways, it has sucked time from us. So, you know, we used to write letters.
Yeah.
You would type a letter. You would handwrite a letter.
Sure.
You would find the envelope. You would go to the post office. You would get the stamp. You would put it in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would wait days, months. You never knew how long before someone would answer your declaration of love or whatever the letter was.
Right.
So, I mean, so that's one thing. We spent so much more time on the phone.
Oh, sure.
Because that's when phones just were for talking.
Right.
And so you would get really long cords for your phone so that you could move around. I mean, that felt like really technological advancement when you could get a really long cord for your phone so that you could move around, you know, into your bedroom where maybe, you know, your mom wouldn't hear you.
Right.
But also, you know, just little things like, I forgot to put this in the column I wrote about this, but you know, now if you're sitting around at dinner and some question comes up and somebody goes, who was that actor who was in that movie? Or who is Pierce Brosnan married to? You would sit around and you would go, gosh, you know, I don't know. And you'd spend a lot of time people going, God, was it him? Was it her? And now somebody whips out their phone, for better or worse. I'd rather go back to the just guessing at it. Somebody whips out their phone. And they check it.
Right.
Tell Mary Schmeek your rule when you and I
think of it. I never, ever, ever go to Google, ever, because I'm afraid that the lanes in my brain that remind me of things to keep me thinking will close down. If you go to Google all the time and you don't use your brain for stuff, you'll just stop using it all 100%.
I worry about that, too. It's like we've...
I worry about the dead air, so I Google right away.
like you did with the founder of
Tim Berners-Lee.
Yes, thank you.
It is. There might be something there, and Bill does challenge me to try. We do try and think about it. I usually have to give in.
Sometimes it'll take hours. Sometimes, like, my whole ride home is, what was the name of that guy that we were trying to remember?
Pop in.
And then I feel good once I remember it, but...
You have more knowledge about these things than almost anyone else, though.
Oh, well, thank you for that. But you know what I mean, right? That if it's a muscle that you stop using, like any muscle in your body, your brain is a muscle.
Right.
You're just going to stop using it altogether.
Right.
So, yeah.
So what else did you do differently before the web?
Wendy, go ahead.
I spent a lot of time playing solitaire.
With cards.
Yes. And I would do this just to shut my brain down. That's what I use Candy Crush for now. There's a word game I play, too. And speaking of that, I did crossword puzzles and word search puzzles. That was my brain needs to shut down. I need to focus on nothing. So I did word games and solitaire.
Don't you worry, though, about things like, let's take cookbooks, for example. It used to be if you go into somebody's house in their kitchen, they had a shelf with 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 cookbooks. And now all that information is online. So why use up the shelf space? There's so much of that going on, you know?
I don't think that's the most pernicious effect of the World Wide Web.
No, no, no.
The
it's access, not the most.
I still have one cookbook that I...
Just one.
Yeah.
Is a good thing. Yeah.
A Better Homes and Garden ones, and I look at it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I used to have 20.
Right. It's changed quite a
but
bit.
But you think about, where did you get your celebrity gossip before?
Rona Barrett.
Okay. You know, I got mine from the grocery store.
Yes.
From the tabloids?
Yeah, from you know, from the tabloids and the trashy magazines
right.
that still exist, but you don't. I asked a guy at Whole Foods the other day. They still had a magazine display, and I looked at him. He was a young clerk, and I said, "Does anybody buy those magazines?" And he said, "There are some women who do."
Really?
Yeah. It's women, though.
I just think it keeps you busy while you're waiting for your
yes.
turn to get checked
out. Who really
out.
Buys them?
Right.
No, but he said people actually bought them. And then the man behind me came, and he bought a cooking magazine, but for his wife, not for himself.
So. Oh, wow.
When I started out in radio, it was 30-some years ago, I played music at the Loop. So I have probably 30 Rolling Stone rock and roll facts books, rock and roll almanac. I came across them at home, and I cannot get rid of them. But I don't need those anymore. First of all, some of that information is no longer relevant. And I can just go on the internet, but I can't part with those books because that's when I was just starting my musical radio
right,
career.
Right. I can't part with my dictionary for the same
yeah.
reason. I never use it. I look everything up online, and I still do look things up. I look words up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I never go to that dictionary.
Isn't that something?
I can't throw mine out either.
Wow. Wow. All right. So at some point, it was, as you mentioned, it was writing letters. Then it became using the phone. Then it became email, and then that took too long, so people now text each other.
Right.
Will at some point, will we have a chip just implanted in our brain and we'll think something and somebody will get whatever we're thinking in their chip?
I no longer laugh at that thought.
Because it's coming true, right?
I fear that thought, but yeah. I don't laugh at it. I do think people are going to get tired of the hassle of holding the phone,
right.
of having to move things around with your fingers and mistype and retype. I do think we're going to see a day when either it's going to be implanted or, you know, whatever happened to like Google Glasses, these
oh,
glasses
those didn't go very far.
You're
right.
going to put on and
right.
and they were going to be your web.
My daughter has a theory because, you know, phone calls came first and then texting. And my daughter's theory is if things would have been the opposite, it would have been better because people go, you can just press a button and talk to somebody. You don't have to type anything in. You just say stuff and they hear you and they say stuff back. Kind of makes sense.
Nobody really wants to talk. That is a huge change. I think people really don't want to talk.
It's so easy. If you have a question, you text them, you get a yes or no answer. Sometimes you do not have time to catch up. Sometimes you just, hey, are you going to Palmer's for St. Patrick's Day? Yes, see you there. Instead of...
But isn't there a residual kind of disintegration effect to that? Because our skill set of just conversing with people, short-term or long-term, is going to vanish.
I worry about that. Sometimes when I worry about it, I think, oh, that's the old fogey in me that's just not allowing things to progress. But I have a nephew who said the same thing to me not longer
yeah.
ago. He said, you know, people of my generation do not know how to look other people in the eye and talk. Now, of course, that's a gross generalization.
There's truth
but,
to it,
but,
though.
But he said that, and it concerned him.
Yeah.
So it's not just...
How old is he?
...the geezers. He's 24.
Oh. So he recognizes it, and he's much, much younger.
You huh. two should go have lunch together and commiserate with one another
right.
and be scared of the future.
All right.
No, I'm
in.
Actually not scared of the future. I am not scared of the future. I think the web has brought us as much as it's cost us. But I think that it's worth thinking about what we lose and how we can make space for the better aspects of what we lose as we get more technologically advanced.
But that feeling that it gives you, that false feeling of being connected, you're not connected. You think you're connected, but you're not because it's not personal interaction.
Well, we're connected to so many more people now. I mean, sometimes my head wants to explode when I think how, I mean, given what we do, we're connected to a lot more people than many people
sure.
are. But even people who aren't in media are connected to so many people now. You're connected to people by email, on Facebook,
right.
on Twitter, on all of these platforms. Anybody can reach you all the time.
Right.
And the capacity to, well, the ability to find any kind of quiet or solitude and the capacity to tolerate it.
Right.
I think it has changed.
I don't like silence. No. Got to fill up the dead air.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and talk with Mary Schmeek some more. We're at 312-981-7200. If you'd like to reach us, we would love to hear from you. Mary Schmeek is here from the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about the 30th anniversary of the World Wide Web. Wendy and I started to tell you the story off air in 1995,
yep,
was it, Wendy?
I think so.
AOL approached us and said, we want to try something. It's a very new concept. It's called a chat room. So what will happen is we'll hook up your computers for this chat room, and people will be able to automatically ask you questions, and you can answer in real time.
Wild.
Very dangerous. Very dangerous.
We were on the air at The Loop at the time at night, right?
Yeah.
And it was, we couldn't believe it. Just fast and furious, all these comments coming in. And so it's like some of them was just like, hi, guys. And we'd be like, oh, you know, prettycherry@AOL.com says hi. It was just so exciting.
It was the very beginning of lonely, demented people sitting at their computers typing weird things.
All right, so what you just said, lonely and demented, for some of those people, it gives them, there's somebody out there that they can connect with. So there's some good in that.
Yeah.
But there's also some bad in that, because in the old days, you would go out and you would meet people and make friendships that would hopefully last a lifetime. But now it's only through electronic means. So it's a mixed blessing,
right?
Right,
so you know, some of those friendships are meaningful and real. A few years ago, I wrote a column on a woman I had met only on Facebook. And I didn't really know her, but she would comment. I would post my columns, and she would comment a lot. And she died. And I was really surprised.
You had never met her in person.
I had never met her in person, and I knew her only because her posts would float past occasionally, and she would comment on my columns. And she died, and I was really moved.
Sure.
And I thought, oh, there's something more real to these connections than I think I had understood.
Mm-hmm.
That I had slowly absorbed things about her life, her love of the Cubs, the fact that she'd immigrated from England, you know, all of these things. And as I watch this outpouring of condolence for her from other people who had only known her online, it did make me think that while I still think face-to-face interaction is vital,
mm-hmm.
and better, this other kind of connection is real.
Are you surprised by the number of people who meet online and then eventually fall in love and get married and have families? Because as a kid, if somebody told you that as a kid, you could meet somebody electronically and then be with them you'd say, oh, it's impossible.
Right. And that's the kind of thing that just viscerally makes no sense to me.
But it happens all the time.
Again, I think people who were born after the invention of the World Wide Web, they are wired differently.
It's no big deal to them. That's business as usual.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yep.
I also think about how differently, you mentioned music before, Wendy, how differently we listen to music now because of the web. You used to have to take the record and put it on the record player, or eventually you got a cassette, or eventually you got a CD, or you turned on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's streaming.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing for television. If you were going to watch TV, you just sat there and you waited for the show to come on.
Right. Waited for something good to come on because there wasn't a big selection.
Right.
Right. And if you wanted to watch a movie at home, I had to Google this for my column, that when did we start to be able to watch movies at home? Blockbuster. What year do you think Blockbuster was invented?
Oh, I would say around 2000?
No, 1985.
1985 or 95?
85.
85.
Right. Wow. So by the time the World Wide Web was invented, there was this thing called Blockbuster, and you could go to the new Blockbuster and you could rent a VHS and go put it in your newfangled VCR.
Which was huge.
And only really technologically savvy people like Eric Zorn knew how to use the VCR for anything other than plugging the Blockbuster VHS in.
Right.
And when we got our VHS video recorder, my sister got a Beta Betamax because she was told it's better sound, it's better picture. So you'd go to Blockbuster and there'd be a million VHS tapes and like one or two betas and maybe three or four movies. That's it.
What was that? Yeah.
But now, you know, it's all streaming all the time.
I love it.
I do too.
I love my web.
I love a lot about it.
We don't have a whole lot of time, but put your headphones on for just a second because I want you to hear Terry on line one. Very interesting story. Terry, thanks for calling WGN. What's up?
Hey, when you were talking about clearing the pathways in your brain, you know, as far as looking up, it struck a nerve because my my nephew, who is one, is lacking in his speech and his word, I guess his bank of words, he should say 25, and he doesn't.
Yeah.
So the speech pathologist was like looking at the family structure, and my sister, unfortunately, throws the tablet in front of the kid as a babysitter, and it ends up being one-way communication, and they said, take that away and start being, you know, going back and forth, and in the 1 month's time, the vocabulary has enhanced. I don't know exponentially if it has, but it has indeed, and that's exactly what you were talking about, that exchange, you know, back and forth and back and forth with people and reading their face
you
rather
need
than
that.
One-way communication.
That's
Mary?
Fascinating. Yeah, so you actually, your brain, you, has to do some work in order
to... Yeah, it's not one way. Right.
Right. Yep. You're not just absorbing.
Yep, or it'll shut down.
And that's interesting.
And the need... And the other thing besides the information superhighway is drive-ups ruined everything. There used to be value to waiting in the post office or in the store or in the bank line, kibbutzing back and forth with people in the neighborhood and the problems, and that's all gone. And I also think it has a lot to do with the garage door opener, where you used to have to get out of your car, open the door, and see your neighbor. They knew when you came home. Now everybody just runs their door, goes in, goes in their little cocoon.
Do you have a garage opener?
I do.
See, that's the thing. So we denounce these things that we are totally addicted to.
But we use them anyway.
But I can't get in my garage. I can't get in it.
Terry, thanks.
Great points. Yeah, thank you for calling. So we're
the
out
of
time.
The decline of civilization, you can blame it on the garage door opener. Mary, thanks very much for stopping by. Read Mary Schmick in the Chicago Tribune. We'll check in next and find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Ryan Burrow from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.